So Wally, in your choice, you wanted to take as many on-the-fly decisions out of the equation, which makes a lot of sense. But I'm thinking this pilot on this route, it's almost like flying over VFR over the top, right? Once this pilot's en route, they are not going to want to descend into turbulence and low-level wind shear to exercise any of those outs that appeal to you. They've got someone next to them with very little experience, and who knows how they're going to react if it's not smooth at 6,000 feet. Isn't there just intense external pressure to just keep going no matter what happens kind of with the airplane, right? How is a pilot going to manage that? And isn't that a strike against the southern route?
Well, I think all the conditions are a strike against all the routes, Jeff. Frankly, it's going to be a rough day for at least part of that trip. And I think, however, our pilot choosing the southern route at least takes the low ceilings and the visibilities and the need to fly at low altitude off the table. The caveats I expressed early on are that our pilot needs to be very proficient with crosswind takeoffs and landings because they may need to land if they have an airplane problem or a passenger problem. If there was any question about that ability, that would just be another stick on the pile, as I said, that would cause me to cancel the trip. But I think with a proficient pilot and clear weather, with crosswind capabilities, the pilot can safely make the journey.
Paul, you are really on the fence, you said, about this. Go, not go. Southern route, not go at all. Why?
Yeah, this is a split decision for me because I agree with Wally that choice three, the southern route, is the best of the available choices. It offers the most risk mitigation. But if you want to do this flight, you have to have high risk tolerance and skills. There's no question about that. And I would make the point, personally, I would do the flight, but for this particular pilot, I'm not so sure. And I would make the choice for bagging the whole thing to simply make the point that general aviation is avocational. There are times when you're not going to be able to go, and you should preload the idea that I'm going to cancel from time to time. I might have to cancel en route. I'll bring a good book or a laptop or whatever to entertain myself. And I did this once. My friend Mark Cook and I spent 40 hours in Winnemucca, Nevada, grounded by snow and ice, and we kept ourselves entertained. So, and I think you just have to tell the clubbies, look, you're going to have to fly this crappy airplane for another year. Get used to it. This is just not worth the risk.
The importance of being able to, like you just said, Paul, bail out during this and sit with a good book. Once this pilot launches, I am sorry if I'm stuck on this, but that southern route, man, even going back to Portland is a bit of a problem. What's wrong with that northern route with the lighter winds? Even though there are fewer places to bail out, there are places you might really take. Is it just the snow showers, or is there something else about that people feel like is a bit of a problem because nobody took it?
I think the problem with anything that covers a lot of mountainous terrain is that mountain weather is very unpredictable and very changeable. I learned how to fly in this environment in New England and then spent 20 years in Colorado and spent so many times diverting, especially on an afternoon trip. And I think there's just too much risk of this weather getting much worse, much faster, with very, very few options.
Wally?
I think the northern route, those snow showers and low ceilings are going to push you down low. And you simply just can't stand being this low in with those kinds of winds. And you're going to be going around snow showers, so it's just way too much. That begins to resemble scud running to me.
Elaine?
I think for flying VFR in the winter, I would rather take the risk of turbulence and high winds than snow showers and getting into IMC over terrain. So that's why I think two is actually the most risky of the options given the season.
Bob?
We have a situation here that the PAVE checklist was really made for, as Wally said earlier. We've got two relatively inexperienced pilots. Neither is instrument rated. We've got an airplane that's not a high wing-loading airplane. It's not great in crosswinds. And we've got a significant crosswind from takeoff at Portland and high crosswinds along the route at various places. If they did need to divert, if you look at those METARs, we're looking at winds up to 41 knots in the area on the surface. Pretty significant. as far as the weather goes. And this is really an external pressure. I think, as Paul said, this airplane can wait another year. It's had a crummy paint job for how long now? What's the big deal? So they miss the slot, and they reschedule it. It's done all the time. So I'm definitely not going.
Yeah, so you're just an absolute not go.
This is not a go.
What if it was just you, Bob? What if they were like, Bob, we need to get this airplane there. You've flown through everything.
Bob has a little bit more experience than these guys.
And so it's really, you would go, is what you're saying, and you would take that southern route.
I probably would go.
Just you alone.
Yes, I probably would go if it were me. But we've got a 750-hour VFR pilot, and a pilot with, I think, 90 hours. So there isn't a great deal of experience here.
Catherine.
Yeah, for me, any of the choices that involved a low ceiling were off the table for this VFR-only pilot. The pilot does have 750 hours, and when I had many few hours in that, I did some flights with some pretty good turbulence. So I was a solid 3. If the pilot feels at all uneasy about it, I would leave the passenger at home and do this by myself. But I'd say this is a go, and I'd succumb to the pressure a little bit because I don't know if you've all painted an airplane, but I've felt the pressure to get the plane to the shop. And so I'd at least give it a go, with the out being turning around.
So the out is going back to Portland. That to me is a question here too. And if you do go, do you kind of have a point of no return on this flight? Is there a point where you're like, man, we're not getting into Danville, but I'm not going all the way back through that to Portland? And how do you decide that? Elaine, you're nodding there.
Oh, I agree with the idea of having at least one abort point, even close to Portland. But one thought I had is, if you decided to continue from there, Bradley is just north of Hartford. I would say, well, we're going to decide coming into Hartford whether we land there or go back to Portland, because the weather is still good, plenty of places to divert. And I'd say if you pick a few along the way, all the way to Danville, you always have that out, and you have your co-pilot saying, I'm not comfortable here, let's take this abort point. So if you plan that ahead of time, the external pressure should be relieved somewhat.
There's a lot of nodding around the table with this concept of a predetermined go, no go, or abort point. How important is that for a flight like this? And how do you determine that kind of thing? Mark?
I think one of the keys here is that you have an enormous amount of pressure to get this flight done. And we talk a lot about the go, no go decision, but there's also the continue divert decision. And you need to be prepared. If you go with a 3 on this, you need to be prepared for the 5 and say, no, we're going to have to scrub this. And you know, the decisions can come at different points. I mean, as soon as you take off, you may say, hey, this is really too much. And you just have to be prepared at every step along the way. I don't think I get to here and that's where I make my decision. I think it's a continuous decision.
Bob?
Well, if you do abort and return to Portland, the winds currently, according to the METAR, is in excess of the TAF. So you're looking at a 27-knot gust out of 340. That's a pretty good right crosswind for these pilots. If you move down to Nashua, you've got pretty much the same situation with gusty winds. So a return or an abort after takeoff is problematical. You've got some of the same issues that you would have if you were to continue the flight and abort later. Aborting early doesn't get you much, as I see it.
Wally.
Well, I agree with Bob. I think if you're going to go on this flight, you need to be prepared to land in the wind you're taking off in. And if you're uncomfortable with that, then you shouldn't go. You shouldn't take the flight.
Paul.
Well, listening to this discussion, I'm developing feet of clay over here. I'm thinking I'm going back to choice 5 as the first choice, because the point about Portland having gusts to 27, that is a real sporty gust for anything, let alone a Cessna 172. So if you're going back to land in that, you better be on your game. And maybe this guy is at 750 hours, maybe he isn't, but he's putting a lot of chips on the table.
Elaine?
I think if you use Portland as that first abort point, remember that you don't have to even land back at Portland. I'm seeing there are other airports in the area. You've got tons of fuel, where you could head to Biddeford, to Sanford, any place where the winds are more favorable, because it's always a principle in my airport, 927 runway. If you can't get in on the crosswind, you go to that airport to the north with the north-south runway and wait it out. So I think that should always be part of a plan anytime the winds are high like that.
Didn't I read somewhere about Paul Bertarelli doing 30-knot crosswind practice in his J3 Cub?
Well, it was actually 25.
But he had double sets of epaulets on when he did that.
And I point out, I was not successful.
And you had another runway lined up into the wind during that entire...
That's right, and the wind was zonal, so it was just for sport. But when you get this many moving parts in the decision-making process for an inexperienced pilot, stuff is just stacking up. And it's just, to me, is with the external pressure, it's just starting to get out of hand. I mean, this is kind of a classic in a way.
Mark?
I wonder how this fits into the calculation. There have been some recent studies. I mean, we always talked about the base to final turn as being the most dangerous thing in aviation. And a lot of studies recently have indicated, no, it's that takeoff, which is actually more dangerous. So you have here a situation where you have some substantial winds for the takeoff. And, you know, that may very well lead to a 5 decision rather than a 3 here.
Bob?
If this pilot goes, he's ignoring all of the information which is available to him. And he's falling back into a situation, well, I'll work it out on the way if I can. And how many accidents have developed from that kind of thinking? So the indicators are there. It's going to be a flight with some hazards. Where's the necessity to do this flight? Well, as Catherine said, you know, it's tough to wait to get your airplane painted, but that's not life-threatening. You can get by. The airplane will still run.
But it is certainly a real pressure, and I appreciate what Catherine said about that. Like, boy, if we don't get this airplane painted, you know, there's corrosion, and I'm the one who's in the center of this, and it's for the club, and all of those things. So there really is a mission mindset to try and figure out a way to get this done. I want to see what is really wrong with option 4 here. The winds are going to die down overnight, right? So why not launch, plan to go to Penn Valley before the weather really turns in, at the very least get the airplane close, only like 12 miles away, wake up before dawn. As soon as the sun comes up, take a look. We can do this up the valley and go. And if it wasn't working out at any time in that flight over, lots of places to land without the horrible crosswinds and the turbulence, all of that. You can even turn around and go back to Portland. Paul?
Nothing wrong with that plan, but bring a book and be ready to get a rental car if you have to drive home, because the guy in the Sears can't come to pick you up because your schedule changed and you can't get over to the paint shop. So you've kind of boxed yourself in and placed yet more ifs into the picture. Just for the sake of what? A little bit of less turbulence and less wind. So, yeah, it's possible, but I don't think it's it doesn't remove that external pressure. It just changes the flavor of it.
Catherine?
Yeah, I agree with Paul there. My own airport does not report, and it is only 8 miles away from an airport that does. And we can be, the nearby airport can be clear in a million, and we are 00, so only 8 miles away. So I think that if you take this option 4, like you say, bring a book, because I think the probability of making that flight the next morning is really low. And when you're talking about low ceilings, that's dangerous.
Wally?
And yeah, now you've put this pilot back in the spot of flying in low ceilings. Now he's in strange territory and still has the same get-there-itis pressure. And Jeff, to your point about waking up early and going at sunrise, probably a good opportunity to have frost on those wings about that time in the morning, this time of year. And so now you're stuck waiting for the sun to come up, and between the sun coming up and the weather going down, it could pressure that pilot into making some bad decisions there, I think.
Mark?
I don't think it's the same pressure as before. I think it's far more pressure than before. If he was under pressure to complete this flight back in Portland, can you imagine the pressure of completing the flight when the airport's only 12 miles away?
Bob?
And Wally, you mentioned frost. How about snow showers? We've got snow showers potentially in the area. So the next morning could be all sorts of issues there.
So let's suppose for a moment this pilot did the flight, got there, wrestled the plane onto the ground at Danville, cheers all around. Flight home in the Cirrus the next day, they manage to get in and bring back. Is there a danger in that? How is there a danger to that pilot and the 90-hour pilot of being successful in a situation like this? And does that even factor into the equation here? Bob?
I see it as these two pilots defied the odds and were successful. That, to me, is going to breed some overconfidence, which might show in some future flights.
Paul?
Yeah, I would kind of take a different view of it. I think if you pull it off and you've got all this information in front of you and you made a risk decision, and it's admittedly a high-risk decision, and you succeed at it, you've built confidence. But if you're smart about it, you will also realize that, things went well for me. I did okay this time, so I have to watch these things for next time. But somewhere along in your flying career, you have to get confidence. You have to do risky things, and you have to sometimes step outside your comfort zone, or you never advance. You never learn anything. So arguing in favor of number three, this sort of does that, even though I still consider it a high-risk decision.
So how does a 750-hour pilot weigh those odds? I totally agree with you. You need to operate outside your comfort zone, but just within your ability zone, if you will, in order to not just advance as a pilot, but not just to maintain. You got to have a workout. How do you decide whether this is, you know, for the good of my flying ability and long-term, you know, involvement in aviation versus this is just a foolhardy venture and I have no business being here, especially when you have 750 hours or 90 hours to even go along on this flight? How does a pilot do that? And yeah, that's the silence I kind of expected, because like it's one of those moments where, boy, you just can't easily sum up that decision. You know, Wally, when we were talking about this scenario, one of the things as we were developing it, I was asking you, so what do you think, Wally? What are you going to choose? And you said, well, I'm going to figure out a way to get it there. And that was your first reaction. I don't know what it is yet, but I think I'm going to figure out a way to get it there. And to me, that was experience talking, because you had this wealth of experience to look at it and be like, this isn't dangerous. As long as we're competent, it's going to be uncomfortable. There's a lot of risk mitigation we're going to have to deal with and a lot of pressure we've got to offload,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that's how you came up with your answer.
I remember that conversation clearly. And that's how I approach looking at this scenario. Is there, in my opinion, is there a safe way that I could do this flight? And I believe that the choice that I chose made it that way. Yes, Paul's correct. There's a lot of risk in this flight for sure. But I felt that would work.
Yeah, I wonder how many of us around the table would do the flight. I would do this flight. When I had 40 hours, I probably would not have done this flight. Just because this pilot has 750 hours doesn't mean that this is an inexperienced pilot. It depends how that 750 hours was spent. So given that, I'm assuming that many of us would do the flight. So how do you get from not doing the flight to doing a flight like this? Well, there's no substitute for just doing a flight like this and getting the experience. And I agree that, you know, you can't get overconfident. You need to put things in perspective. But I'm assuming that this pilot can do that.
Bob?
How are you not overconfident when you're looking at a 27-knot gust from about 45 degrees, which means that's about a 70% crosswind? You're flying a Cessna 172 with a demonstrated crosswind, not a limitation, but a demonstrated crosswind of what, 15 knots? How are you not being overconfident? So you're going to qualify yourself as a test pilot in this case.
Well, as I said, I would do choice number three, but the overriding philosophy here is that experience is the best teacher, but tuition is a bitch. and this is an example of this. So you're taking risk, but presumably the reward is that, well, you get the airplane where it's supposed to be and you learn something along the way. You become a better pilot.
Elaine?
My caveat with number three, besides having the abort points, was to assume that this 750-hour pilot did have some experience with heavy crosswinds and turbulence, maybe with an instructor or along those lines, because I do believe in personal minimums, personal maximums, and I would not exceed those to do a flight like this. I would have maybe taken number five. So that was one of the things that this pilot should keep in mind. Have I done this before? Have I practiced it? And let's say they pulled it off. There you go. You can revisit those maximums.
You know, I really appreciate something you said, Catherine, early on in this discussion about, you know, this pilot could probably do it. They might want to leave that other pilot behind. And there's a whole nother discussion probably about whether that pilot is an asset or a liability or a little bit of both. That's for another time, I think. But I think it sums up what's happening here at the end. Pretty much everybody at this table could do this flight themselves. Most of us at this table would do the flight ourselves, right? But for that pilot with 750 hours with someone tagging along, maybe not, or only if they have the right level of experience, or I'm just not sure it's right on the line, or I was going to go, and then maybe not, said Paul, after considering it even more. That's experience talking, but out there in the world, 750 hours is an experienced pilot in many ways. When you had 750 hours, you probably felt you were an experienced pilot. And to some degree, you were, right? You were out there, and it depends on what kind of experience you had. So to me, the real takeaway from all this is how there really is no right answer in a lot of these situations. There is no way to know if this is the flight you're so glad you did or the flight you wish you hadn't until you actually attempt to do it. And that's just part of the risk tolerance and mitigation that GA is really all about.